Taming the tongue. Taming the tongue. See, this tongue is toxic, right? The toxic tongue encourages us to change it. Mushrooms also have been known to be toxic. Author Nicholas Evans and his wife and two family members enjoyed a meal in September 2008, and they ate this mushroom, the webcap, deadly webcap mushroom, and they all had severe effects. The author had to undergo kidney dialysis and actually a kidney transplant. This mushroom looks like other edible ones, but within 6 to 12 hours of eating, you have violent abdominal pain, vomiting, diarrhea, rapid loss of fluid, and it spreads to your liver, kidneys, central nervous system, and the condition leads to coma and death in more than 50% of the incidents. So, careful your mushrooms. This is my campaign against mushrooms. All right, so be patient with this. This is the angel wing mushroom, widely eaten in Japan and all over. Until 2014, many became sick. 17 died. They're still trying to determine the cause of how this mushroom caused kidney and liver problems other than just bad taste. There's serious repercussions beyond just eating it on your pizza. Very dangerous. Can be very, enjoyable. Or it can be deadly. Move to something less deadly here. Nitroglycerin. It was Alfred Nobel, author of the Nobel Prizes, who actually invented, you know what he invented? Dynamite. Invented dynamite. I'm guessing he didn't get a Nobel Peace Prize for that one. But he was able to harness and control nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin, this explosive chemical compound that can, if mixed at the right place and time, heats up to a temperature of 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit and explodes. But this chemist learned how to combine it with other substances to control it, to manipulate it, to use it for good. A volatile chemical compound became useful and actually used very widely, controlled explosives to blow up needed things, like making room for roads or railroad lines. Very helpful. And now we're even using this medically, right? For heart stuff. And so this nitroglycerin can actually be helpful. Very deadly. Very, very caustic if misused. But also very helpful if harnessed. And we're seeing that with James here, this explosive, dangerous part of our bodies and our lives, this communication, this tongue can be very useful and helpful and health-giving, but it can also be very destructive, as we'll see today, even deadly. So the toxic can be tasty, the explosive can be constructive, and the very tongue that can bring death can be the tongue that can bring life. In order to do that, each one of these folks, right, those who use mushrooms for their salads, or those who use nitroglycerin for their heart, need to know the dangers and how to harness those dangers to use them constructively. And as we look at our text today, we do the same thing with the tongue. James is going to give us the toxic nature of the tongue so we can understand the components that make it extremely dangerous. And through those character traits, we'll find out how to harness it and better use it, or at least not use it destructively. How can I look at my tongue, look at my speech? Again, this is not just my tongue, but we apply this to all our communication, my typing, my texting, all of these things. The way I communicate, how can I use it constructively? And in order to do that, we have to understand how it works. We have to break apart all the chemical compounds and see, this is how it's extremely difficult here. This is how it's dangerous over here. And we understand then how to harness it and use it. Because naturally, it's deadly. And so we see the uncontrollable nature of the tongue, the deadly nature of the tongue, and the duplicitous nature of the tongue as our three primary ideas from James. We dig into these verses. And each of those aspects show how dangerous it is, and therefore not just how carefully we need to be, but it even gives us insight into how to use it positively, how to harness that power and use it for powerful good. So number one, from verse 6, control your tongue because it's naturally deadly. So each of these we're going to kind of apply to spurring us on to control it, seeing its danger. Control your tongue, first of all, because it's naturally deadly. Not just able to cause injury, but even cause death. We need to wake up to that. Its deadliness, verse 6, is seen in how it spreads and its source. And so really verse 6 is made up of five different phrases. These phrases show its deadliness and how it spreads. The first four phrases, deadliness and how it spreads. And then that fifth phrase right at the end of verse 6, it's deadliness in its source, not just how it spreads. So look at the five phrases. You see them? The tongue is a fire, tells us one phrase about our speech. What's the next phrase? The very world of iniquity is our tongue. This is not a very good picture he's painting. Number three, it's the tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body. So you can see how it's talking about it spreading. Number four, and it sets on fire the course of our life, right? So it's spreading beyond just one day, but our whole life. And then it goes from that spreading to the source. It's deadly because of its source, and it's set on fire by hell. So let's look at a little closely, more closely, so we can really let it sink into our hearts and our minds how we can respond to this. The tongue is deadly and how it spreads. The first phrase there is that the tongue is a fire. And referring to this danger, but its danger even as it spreads. And we did look at this last time, but we'll just kind of reconvene thinking about it and move on. But he's giving this picture of a fire. It starts with just a flame, but in the other conditions, it can spread to take over a whole forest, right? So there's conditions in which fire is good, and there's conditions where it's bad. We have to have fire for heat and light. Cook. But it can also spread to be deadly, that which would destroy a whole city. And so we need to be careful with our tongue and our speech. One of my favorite things to do at my grandmother's house, this was in Pennsylvania, she would always be called June. She would not be called Grandma. So I know her as June. And every other day we were able to go out and burn the trash. That was so fun as a kid growing up. We'd take the garbage outside and pile it in this barrel and burn it up, burn the garbage. But there would be days that were too windy, or perhaps there was a season where it was too dry and the local municipality would not let you burn trash in your backyard. You were not permitted to because these brush fires might catch fire to something good and not just burn trash. And so you've got to be very careful about the specific timing in which you can burn the residential garbage. And this is the tongue. We need to know the conditions in which to use our tongue, to use our speech for good, and be careful about those conditions where it can be used to be deadly. And if you unleash it in those moments, that one spare word can be set a whole forest aflame. One of your words can spiral someone to a season of discouragement and depression, where it could even be deadly in their case. Your words can bring great life, or your words can bring death. Your words can be a fire in someone's heart or mind that they will bear the rest of the day, or the scars that they'll bear the rest of their life. And they may never recover. So we need to be careful. Careful with our speech. No unguarded tweets. Right? Be careful lashing out on social media. I was about to send a tweet this week, and I'm even now, I don't think I'll tell you what it was about. I always wait a day before I do social media. I wait till the next day. I was like, you know what? This is perfect. I thought it was kind of funny. And this speaks to something that everyone's talking about right now. But I'm just not going to get involved in that. Because it becomes incendiary. And there's so many good things to talk about. And so I deleted it. Oh, be careful, little Christian, what you post. Right? We've got to be very careful about our speech, and that doesn't mean just when we're talking face-to-face, but that means especially on the internet, our words. This is what's scary about this. Your words, anybody's words, can be heard by billions right now. By billions. By the way the internet works. And you can say a million positive things in your life, but you could say one negative thing, and that could be that which catches fire. And causes destruction, a worldwide fire, right? We all need to be careful, and let's just apply it to ourselves. You can think of many ways this could be applied, but let's apply it to ourselves. We need to be careful about what we say. Incendiary words are the ones that spread more quickly instead of the guarded words of caution. It is a fire that spreads quickly. And then what does he say? Number two, this phrase, it's spreading in that it's the very world of iniquity. Right? So he's saying how this spreads. It's not just one sin. It is the world of iniquity. That is a huge statement. And the Holy Spirit is telling us this. Your speech is the world of iniquity. What does that mean? Generally, we understand it means it's very sinful. Speech can be very sinful. But if we understand the way world is used in the Bible, there's this idea behind it of this organized system, this cosmos, this how things work together all around us. And what James is saying is this idea of the sin of speech is what drives it all. If you were to make an organized chart of all the sins that you were able to commit, the line that would combine each one to one another would be the sin of speech, is what he's saying. It's the very world of iniquity. Ties it all together. The tongue, speech, not just the words you verbalize, but the words in your head, right? The components of meaning that we put ideas together. That voice inside you is where it all starts. And it's the very world of iniquity, whether it's spoken out or it's let yourself lie to yourself. It's what's behind adultery, idolatry, theft, of course lying, disobedience to authority. All these things start in our minds and our hearts as little flames, little words. If we don't put them out when they're in the heart, they are enacted. Ideas, speech, vocalized, and it spreads from there to be the very world of iniquity, including every sin that you can commit. And so the spread is the world of iniquity. Next, he says, the tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body, because it spreads to all these other sins, and therefore spreads to every aspect of our life, our entire body. It's really fascinating the way he describes it here. Set. It's kind of like it sets itself up. The word, your tongue, is that little thing. But the idea here is it sets itself up as the CEO, as the chief. And it tells everything else what to do. And that's what it does. The tongue, if it's not controlled, if your words and thoughts are not controlled inside you, it sets itself up and tells you everything that you should do wrong. It calls the shots, it gives the orders, and therefore it defiles the whole body. It just spreads, the stain spreads all over your life, all over your body. Like a spreading illness, like a cancer, it gets into every aspect of who you are. So it's not just speech. You have to control it because it's a fire that sets on course your whole life. We have to control it at that inner level. Changing our mind and our heart, as we'll see, is what he points to. But then it sets your whole life on fire. And then look at number four. It sets on fire the course of our life. Right? Tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body. So it's getting into every aspect. Your tongue is telling your ears to do the wrong thing. And your nose to smell the wrong thing. And your mouth to eat mushrooms. Right? It's telling you all these horrible things. I'm okay with mushrooms. But it's telling you to do all the wrong things. It's the CEO. And then it sets on fire the whole course of your life. And this is the spreading thought here. It's a little hard to understand exactly what James is getting at, but I think what he's saying here is the idea is wheel, the whole wheel of your existence. And so the idea is not just are you going to be defiled today, but it's going to take over and it wants to control your whole life. From when you're a baby to when you die. That whole course of your existence will be controlled by that little CEO if you don't take care of it. And so it spreads and takes over not just every aspect of sin, but every aspect of your life, defiling your life for the rest of your days. It's like a gangrene infection that spreads from one part of the body to the next, to the next, to the next. It's a cancer. One little deception turns into another, and then it turns into a lie, and then it turns into a life of lies, and it takes over your whole life if your conscience permits that. It's the gatekeeper that opens up every other sin as it spreads. Defiles your whole body. And so we need to control it at its inception in the mind. The tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life. And is why is it so bad? Because of the source. It's set on fire by hell. Right? So we're looking at the spread, how it spreads in those first four phrases. And then he finishes verse 6 by telling it's deadly by its source. This is why it's so bad. It comes from hell. It comes from hell. What is the source of this speech that turns deadly, this speech that turns destructive, this speech that wants to control us? The source is hell itself. The word is Gehenna, the Valley of Hinnom, referring to that area in Jerusalem where they would burn garbage. It was actually used in the days of the kings to worship idols. Actually, human sacrifice would be taking place there as they offered to Molech. And so King Josiah, as he instituted reforms, defiled this place that was used for such a wicked thing and turned the people back to worshiping God. But they set that field aside, that valley, and eventually became a trash dump. And it was that, always burning, always smelling, worms there. The fire was never quenched, and Jesus would use that as a picture of the eternal fire of punishment that would happen upon not just Satan and his angels, for which was prepared, but all who follow that rebellion and will not receive the gospel of Jesus. And so Jesus uses this as well as a picture of eternal punishment. And so James is saying that place, that hell that was made for Satan, actually characterizes that speech because Satan was the king of speech. Satan used speech to deceive Adam and Eve, and so Jesus calls him the deceiver, the liar, that liar from the beginning. It was the voice of pride that he exalted himself and wanted to be above God. That was his very sin, Satan's sin, that made God cast him out of his presence. The Bible tells us in Revelation that he is not just the father of lies, but the deceiver, the slanderer. Not just the deceiver, but the slanderer. He is a liar, a boaster, and a slanderer. He is constantly accusing the brethren. Brothers and sisters, he's accusing you of sin before the Father. And Tim, look what he did. He's wicked. That's what Satan does. We see what he did with Job. That's what he's constantly doing before God. And who do we have in our place? Not my righteousness. We have Jesus as our defense attorney, the Bible says. He's standing and saying, But I died for that sin. But I died for that sin. But Satan's job is to always, with his mouth, deceive. He lies to you. He lies to you. He disparages you before the Father. And so when we use these same tactics of lying, when we use these same tactics of cutting someone down, of slandering, we are using the very tongue of hell. That's what James is saying. This tongue that could be healing and bring life can actually be that which would destroy and be deadly. And so he says, consider and control your tongue, because it's naturally that which would bring death. Secondly, these other two will move through more quickly because they're illustrations, and so he gives good pictures that take up two verses. Control your tongue, not just because it's deadly. Control your tongue because it's naturally uncontrolled. It's naturally untame and running about. Right, so this gets more difficult. Not only is this thing deadly, this wild beast that's deadly is wild. It's untamable. He gives in verses 7, 8 a physical picture and then a spiritual principle. Look at the physical picture in verse 7. Every species of beasts and birds and reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. Right, this statement, this picture. You know what? We've kind of gotten control of these animals. And at that time, they had. By now, we've even done even better, right? When we study ecosystems and we see that this animal is hurting this ecosystem, or this animal is needing help over here, right? We think of ways to even help our environment. Now, there's a really neat dominion mandate that God gave at creation to the human race, saying, here is everything else, have dominion over this. And he's not just saying, consume it all. He's saying, rule over it. Take care of it, right? There's an aspect of that in that command. And so James looks at four characteristics of different beings other than humanity. He says there's beasts, and that's referring to all animals that go about. Then birds, the animals that fly about. Reptiles, the animals that slither about. And then creatures of the sea, the animals that swim about. Kind of a neat way to diagram every little place. And he says they've been tamed by the human race. And the language here does put us in a different category. In that we're not just another animal, right? But there is the humans, and humanity is to tame the rest. And he says in verse 8, what makes us different, actually verse 9, that we're made in the image of God. But here are all these beasts, these different categories, and humanity has been able to tame them. God has given you rule over them, and you've done really a great job. Good. But this is tongue-in-cheek, because it's fascinating. You've ruled everything else, but you can't rule yourself. That little tongue inside you is what's ruling you. Verse 8, the spiritual principle. You've been able to do all this, but no one can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil and full of deadly poison. We can't control our own nature. We can control all of nature, but our own nature. have all this environment under control, but you still lash out, you still harm one another, you still are angry with your speech and mean in what you say. And it's really a neat picture as well here in verse 8 as he highlights the tongue. He says it's what? Restless evil, full of deadly poison. And so you can see he's trying to capture the image of this wild beast. It's a restless evil. And so you see this pacing tiger, restless, back and forth and back and forth. That's your tongue. It's, you know, I have it under control. Yeah, but it's just pacing. It's just pacing, ready to pounce when it can. So you may have it under control today, tomorrow, but it's still pacing. It's still wild. It's still something you have to keep in the forefront of your thinking as what needs to be controlled, because it's always a restless evil and full of deadly poison, that which would spread and bring cancer upon the whole of the body, the whole of the church, the whole of the world. And so we tame all these other things, but we can't even control ourselves. And so I would just apply this to ourselves. Again, this is not something that I'm bringing about one person. I just heard that person say that, and I really got to do a series on the tongue. No! This is saying, this is a message for Tim. This is a message for each of you. Nobody gets to the point where their tongue is finally, I got to worry about that anymore. No, you just sinned with your tongue. You just were boastful. Right? The tongue is always there. It's always something that we have to be aware of, as that which would try to destroy even my brothers and my sisters. He's talking about us here. He's not just talking about the people in the world. He's talking about brothers and sisters. This is a message that we all have to be careful to control our tongue. You will never get to the point where you say, I don't have to worry about that anymore, because in that cage of your teeth is a roaring wild beast. In my early teens, we moved to a suburban area. I guess it was suburban. It was a suburban church, or a country church, actually. And one of the ladies that our family picked up for church was Mrs. Gessner. She was in her 90s, and I can't remember. I was young, so I can't remember all the details. My dad tells the story better. But there was a epidemic or an issue of gossiping, and so they had to address it in the church, in a church meeting. And Mrs. Gessner got up in front of everyone, and she took the microphone, and she held it to her ear like it was a phone. And she said, I'm not the one gossiping. And it was just so funny that it looked like she was talking on the phone. But I'm sure she was telling the truth, for those of you who are great-grandchildren, right? But the issue is, it's something we all have to be careful about, right? Whether you're 95 or you're 5 or you're 2, right? We come naturally born to destroy with our tongues. And we need God to change us to where we bring healing with our tongue. Because our last principle here, the tongue is naturally deadly. The tongue is naturally that which would destroy in that way. Naturally untamed. And then thirdly, lastly, our tongue is naturally duplicitous. Naturally, it starts doing this horrible thing, this bipolar issue with your tongue, this spiritual principle. This time he gives first in verses 9 and 10. Verses 9 and 10, he gives us the spiritual principle, then he illustrates it in verses 11 and 12. Look at the spiritual principle. The actions of verse 9. With it, with this tongue, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the image and likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessings and cursings. All right, that's the action, and then there's this prohibition in verse 10. This should never be. And the idea is there's this incongruity. This is illogical. This does not compute. Right, he's like, this should never happen like this. This doesn't make sense that from your mouth, from your tongue, from your speech, from your email, you could have such glorious praises to God and such wicked speech to to your brother or sister. And again, look at what he says, with it we, and he's talking about brothers and sisters. In verse 10, my brethren. So he's not just talking about politicians, right? He's talking about people in church. Be very careful with your tongue, because as we all pray, and so he points to the greatest activity you could be involved in, praising our God, singing praises. Yes, we all need to be involved in that, and that thing is included in our language and our speech. And you can craft poems and write music and beautifully demonstrate your gifts in how we praise and bless our Lord and Father. Yes, do that. But then it's duplicitous. At the same time, your tongue will try to be used to curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. Right? That you're blessing God, and yet every human being is made in the image of God. Every human being has that even though broken by the fall, that representation that God made humans different. And that's what I'm saying. He's putting humans in a different class than all the animals. Humans are made different because in that human being there is part of the image of God. He made us like Him in certain ways that He did not make the animals like Him. This is a special creation, humanity. And each person is made in the likeness of God. So he's saying it doesn't make sense that you're praising God and yet you're cursing people who are made in the image of God. Doesn't make sense. It doesn't compute. By cursing here, he's not just talking about four-letter words. He's actually, the idea is that lashing out at someone because of something they did, you're irritated with them, and you speak condemnation upon them. All right, that's what he's talking about. And it's very common in our society to do that. Even people flippantly say these things. He's saying, how can that happen? How can it happen that you're brothers and sisters together in the church, and yet someone irritates you and you start screaming at them, or you're mean-spirited toward them? Doesn't work. And so Friday night, we were driving as a family, and we were following this pizza delivery guy, and something happened with him in the car in front of him that made him extremely upset. And we heard him, our windows were shut, we heard him, the horn honking, of course, for a while, but then he gets out of his car and he's screaming, and he's got full dress garb in his pizza uniform. I'm not going to tell you the pizza carrier. And the car blasted all over it was this pizza carrier. And in his hands were the wormy thing that said the pizza carrier. And he's screaming and yelling. It did not reflect well on that business at all. And the same thing happens when you're out there screaming at someone. Or you let your speech, it's reflecting poorly, not just on yourself, but on your Father. That's a Christian? That's a Christian? Right? That's a guy who works for that company? Right? That's a Christian, and yet they are not being Christ-like at all. We're reflecting poorly on our Father. Our Father who deserves only praise and adoration. And yet if we're not careful with our speech, from that same mouth can come praise and also insults. That's incongruous. And so James illustrates it well there, the physical picture in verses 11 and 12. Does a fountain send forth from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. Gives these illustrations from agriculture, right? You don't go to a fig tree and expect different fruit. You don't go to a Christian and expect different speech. And here's where he really gets to the heart of the issue. And from here, we change to the solution. Both this week and then next week, we're actually handling Ruth and Christmas, but when we get back to it, read verses 13 through 18, really some of my favorite verses in all of Scripture. Beautiful verses. And we're going to enjoy those together. But here's where he's pointing to the solution. The solution is to have a changed spring. The solution to have is a changed vine. The issue is not just change all your fruit and turn over a new leaf and control yourself. Right? There's some self-control that comes into it. But the issue is this. What's springing out from you should be what's changed in your heart. And when God changes your heart, He changes your speech. He changes your words. And so you're expecting these pleasant words. We need to bring this to a close. But God changes us from the inside out, and that is the way we change. I wanted us to turn to Ephesians 4. Maybe you could do that in your time on yourself. But he says that God makes us new people. And he changes us from where we're those who are lying to those who are speaking truth. We lay off the old man and we put on the new. Our former of life is gone. We have new life. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away with you, along with all malice. Instead, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. There's this new nature that comes. And when that happens, we start to change our words. And people come around us and they're like, you're different. It's pleasant. One of my favorite places to swim is not the pool in Corona there. Because it's just the water I know is so nasty. And when it gets in my mouth, I'm like, oh no. Right? I hope I don't get sick. But my favorite place to swim is in upstate New York. There's this, where our church went one of these days. We went there, Bashfish Falls. But there's this lake. And it's not fed from any creek. Right? It's not fed by a creek up the hill where there's dead deer, you know, rotting, and they're bringing the water in. It's fed from this spring underground. The water is completely fresh. It's like swimming in spring water, because that's what you're doing. You're swimming in spring water. So you that if it gets in your mouth, it's probably still not good, but it tastes so good. It's so refreshing, right? Because it's coming from a fresh spring. What if you're swimming there and you open your mouth and that fresh spring water, and it's all salty and nasty? That doesn't make sense. Where did ocean water get in here? When someone's around you and they know you're a Christian, when they hear that salty language, they should be thinking, how did that get in there? I mean, usually I'm around this guy and it's just so pleasant. They're just so kind. They're saying gracious things. How did that get in there? Doesn't make sense that could get, because your heart has changed, because God is changing you from the inside out. What comes out is loving. And I had a couple stories that teach this, but we'll just have to finish here. But I think you could, all of you, could say how God has changed your heart, right? God changes our heart. He turns us from people who would be even just manipulative and mean-spirited in our speech to people who are gracious and loving in our speech. It doesn't happen overnight. Well, sometimes the change happens overnight. But the consistency of it is as the Spirit changes us into the image of Christ, we start speaking more and more and more like Jesus until all things are new. A controlled tongue. Do we have control of your tongue today? This toxic tongue that would bring us down. We need to ask that the Lord would subjugate it and replace it with a tongue that lifts up, not just praising God, but lifts up our brothers and sisters. Heads bowed and eyes closed. Perhaps the Lord's convicted you. I know He convicts me every time I look at these passages. Lord, give me grace to consistently honor You with my speech. May all that I do, whether it be in essay form or communication form or even talking with my children, may it always be that which is controlled and gracious and loving. My co-workers, behind closed doors, not just at church, but all the time. You'd say, Tim, I've never had that change. I've never seen anything change in my life like that. Maybe that's because you were born again when you were five. right? So you don't remember the speech before that. But maybe it's because you've never had a change. Your heart has never changed. God has never saved you from your sin. That's not just condemnation saved from the penalty of sin. That's freeing you from the power of your sin. That's not to say that we will never sin, but we have the solution to it. When we see a dramatic change as God changes us from those who are cursing to those who are blessing. And maybe it's that you've never had that change because you've never been born again. And if so, I'd encourage you even now to say, Lord God, I believe in Jesus that he died to take the penalty for my sin. But I also believe that he died to give me power over my sin. I ask that he would free you from that even now and ask for salvation from your sin. He will give that to you based on Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection life. If you'd like spiritual counsel, I'll be standing at the back and be happy to pray with you and give counsel. Let's all do business with the Lord in this quiet moment before.